Welcome. You are listening to the Audio Information Network of Colorado. This recording is intended to be used solely by individuals with barriers to print.
Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff. My name is Gretchen Miller. We're going to start off today with a little bit of information from Christine Ha at theblindcook.com. 5 bars in Bangkok with great food. We all know that Bangkok has a vibrant nightlife. Case in point, CNN reports that the options in Thailand's capital run the gamut from dive bars to fancy clubs. But don't be fooled. It's not always about cheap beers and cocktails in these parts. You'll find fine quality food and a bar chow at many of these late night joints too. After all, Thai food is revered as a global classic. Here are 5 Bangkok bars with great food that you should check out the next time that you visit Thailand. First, the Bamboo Bar. If you're looking for some timeless historic luxury, then you're in the right place. Located inside the Mandarin Oriental Hotel, the Bamboo Bar has been around since 1953 and prides itself on its constantly changing drinks menu. That way, no 2 visits are exactly the same. The food is nothing to shake your head at either. Their Italian Parma ham on sourdough and Nordic Gravlax salmon, while on the more expensive side of the spectrum, will make you feel like you're living the high life. Next, Park Society Restaurant and Terrace. There are a lot of rooftop bars in Bangkok, but the Park Society Restaurant and Terrace at So Sofitel is one of the best. This award-winning restaurant features a number of modern cuisines, getting inspiration from North America, the Caribbean, Europe, and Africa. The majority of their menu is for whole table sharing, like their plate full of tapas and huge servings of fish and chips. It also offers the best view of the Siam and Siloam skyline, as well as Lumpini Park. The Smokin' Pug, has American classics like chicken wings and barbecue ribs, are something that's hard to resist. And Western-style restaurants are becoming increasingly common in Bangkok due to the changing demographic of the city. An article on Thailand by Expat Bets, how the expat community in the country is increasing due to the high standards of living at such a low cost. And many of these expats have a craving for good Western dishes, which is why the Smokin' Pug along Lang Suan Road is so popular. While the place is mostly known for its original cocktails, they also have a vast selection of American classics, including tacos, pulled pork sandwiches, and enormous racks of ribs, complete with their original barbecue sauce. It's best to get a reservation as the place is almost always full. Whether you're looking for authentic Thai food or miss something from home, you're bound to find something great. Next, the Tep Bar. Located in Chinatown's Swar Nana, this lively hub is known to play high-tempo yet classic Thai percussion instruments while you enjoy a glass of wine. But before you get there, the whereabouts of this place is part of the charm. It's tucked away in a very small alley of the old town street near Hua Lam Phong, in a 2-storied restaurant with no signage that passerby wouldn't think twice to check. Once inside, check out their extensive menu of popular Thai dishes, such as sun-dried Thai beef, as well as papaya salad, and raw prawns. However, avoid weekday evenings if you can, since it tends to be extra packed. Then there's the Score Bar. Apart from Muay Thai, the NBA and European soccer leagues have gotten quite big in Thailand. This is why the capital is home to plenty of sports bars where Thais combine their love of sport with their love of food. One of the best places to experience this is Score Bar. Located in the depths of Soar Sakhumvit 11, Score Bar is heaven for any sports fanatic. Not only do they have giant flat screens to enjoy your favorite sports on, but they also have in-bar sport games like pool. The establishment serves a wide range of dishes from different cuisines, including Asian classics such as Pad Thai, Mi Goreng, and Hokkien Mi. It's also known to serve a good plate of chicken wings with 15 different flavors to choose from. Sports fan or not, that is something that everyone can appreciate. These are just some of the bars that serve awesome food in the culturally rich and vibrant capital of Bangkok. Keep this list in mind to make the most out of your next visit to this awesome and tourist-friendly city. Continuing on with a post from theblindcook.com, cool ideas, the many ways to use ice in the kitchen. Ice can be used in the kitchen for more than just cocktails or for keeping food cool. Almost every kitchen and restaurant is equipped with a nugget or sonic ice machine, and those tiny frozen blocks can aerate caffeinated drinks, preserve the snap of green beans, protect the texture of a sauce, and crystallize into refreshments. Let's see how we can use ice to come up with some cool recipes. First, crunchy vegetables. You can use an ice bath on vegetables to achieve two things. First, you can bathe raw vegetables in ice to make them extra crispy since water is restored to the cells of the vegetables. You can also plunge the vegetables in ice water after blanching them to stop the cooking process. This is used when you want to preserve the texture and color of vegetables while also properly cooking them. Sauce emulsifier. Oil and water may not mix, but oil and ice do. This is because colder temperatures are conducive to emulsions. For example, when you make a vinaigrette, you can combine all of the required ingredients with a single ice cube and just shake the mixture. You could also add ice to an aioli for a delicious sauce that will not separate. Easy peel. Tomatoes, peaches, and eggs can be made easier to peel if you use ice. For peaches and tomatoes, you blanch them before putting them into boiling water. Then you transfer the ingredients to a cool bath of iced water. Their skin will slide right off. For eggs, all you have to do is transfer them to a bowl of iced water and wait for them to cool down. Cool hot custard. Ice creams require a custard base. These bases have to be chilled before making the actual ice cream. Obviously, you can use ice to speed up the custard's cooling process. Do this by placing the hot custard bowl into a bowl of iced water. Rotate the bowl of custard and stir the base until it cools. The bottom line? Don't rely on ice only for cocktails and cool drinks. It has so many other uses, from preserving the crunch and color of your vegetables to making the laborious task of peeling them easier. Next, we've got some information from The Blind Kitchen. This is going to be a recipe for a festive cheese ball. This make-ahead cheese ball appetizer is a welcome addition to serve at any party. The strategy is to have bright green and red spots of color against a snowy white background. So the colors are the star of the show, besides the taste, of course. This is going to yield 16 half-ounce servings. The ingredients: 1 8-ounce package of room temperature cream cheese, 1 cup of shredded sharp white cheddar cheese, 1/4 cup of finely diced red bell pepper, 1/4 cup of finely diced green bell pepper, 1 tablespoon of finely diced green part of a scallion, 1 teaspoon of onion powder, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1 teaspoon of ground white pepper, 1/2 teaspoon of seasoning salt, blend of your choice, and 1/2 teaspoon of liquid smoke. Instructions. First, you're going to put the cream cheese into a medium bowl to allow it to soften as it comes to room temperature. Recipe tip. To bring the cream cheese to room temperature more quickly, cut it into smaller pieces so more surface area is exposed to the air and it'll soften faster. Step 2, prepare the produce. Finely dice 1/4 cup of red bell pepper and set aside. Finely dice 1/4 cup of green bell pepper. Add to the red bell pepper and set aside. Finely dice 1 tablespoon of the green parts of the scallions and set aside. For a recipe tip, use the slicing guide to make sure that the bell pepper is a consistent width. Once you have cut the bell pepper into strips, use kitchen scissors to easily cut them into similarly sized pieces, and do the same with the scallions. A TBK tool, slicing guide, cut glove, and dry measure cups, there are links at theblindkitchen.com. Step 3, you're going to shred 1 cup of white cheddar cheese and set aside. Recipe tip, because the sharp white cheddar cheese will not be melted in this recipe, using pre-shredded cheese is fine. If you do shred the cheese, use the cut glove to protect your hand while shredding. Step 4, on slow speed, beat 8 ounces of softened cream cheese with a hand mixer until smooth and creamy. Step 5, season the cream cheese. Add 1 teaspoon of onion powder, add 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, add 1 teaspoon of ground white pepper, and add 1/2 teaspoon of seasoning, salt blend of your choice. Add 1/2 teaspoon of liquid smoke. And the TBK tool you might need for this is wet measure spoons. Blend all ingredients and adjust seasonings to taste. Step 6, you're going to mix in 1 cup of shredded white cheddar cheese. Step 7, you're going to gently fold in the produce, red and green bell pepper pieces and green parts of the scallions, taking care to distribute them throughout the cream cheese mixture without bruising the produce. Step 8, use a sheet of plastic wrap or one of our elasticized and reusable dish and bowl covers to shape the cheese mixture into a round ball. TBK tool, hanging bag, and covers. Step 9, refrigerate for at least 1 hour so that all flavors rehydrate and meld together. Serve in an attractive dish surrounded by crackers or baguette slices and enjoy. As far as next steps, the Blind Kitchen offers adaptive tools, helpful strategies, and specialized knowledge to blind and visually impaired people who want to cook safely, confidently, and independently. Our collections are available online, as are our short instructional videos. Shipping is always free. Everyone has a place at the table in the Blind Kitchen. Next, we're going to have a recipe from smittenkitchen.com for hummus heaped with tomatoes and cucumbers. Like clockwork, every summer I decide that the only thing I want to eat, maybe forever, because when it's warm out, I completely forget winter is coming. Sorry, I had to, are variations on tomato cucumber salad. We did a world tour of these last year, and it might take me another decade of smitten kitchening, but I will get to them all. Left to our own devices, my husband and I probably would eat this exact thing for dinner at least a couple nights a week. But when feeding kids, I always feel the need. I mean, well, they are growing rapidly, and we're supposed to fuel them with balanced meals or something, right? I feel obligated to provide a little more than a bowl of cucumbers and tomatoes for dinner. You know, protein and stuff. So in the U.S., we generally think of hummus, which simply means chickpea in Arabic, as a cold snack, a dip you buy in the fridge case to help distract you from, say, cool ranch potato chip dip or something. But throughout the Middle East, there are hummus... Humusias, places that serve hummus warm and freshly made. I'm going to read that again. But throughout the Middle East, there are many places that serve hummus warm and freshly made, often a little softer than what we get here, usually heaped with other things. Yes, as a meal, a heavenly one. Toppings might include additional tahini or chickpeas, cooked fava beans, sauteed mushrooms, roasted beets, hard-boiled eggs, falafel, spicy ground beef, chopped tomato, onion, cucumber salads, pickles and or green olives, plus always a stack of freshly baked puffy pitas. In some areas, hummus is a breakfast food accompanied by labneh and mint, And it is from daydreaming about all of this, with a reminder from this oh-so-tempting In a Garden photo from last week, that I realized that the easiest way to turn my tomato-cucumber salad obsession to a meal was to serve it humociat style. This could not be simpler to pull off for dinner tonight. Chop some tomatoes, cucumber, and red onion, and dress it lightly with olive oil, lemon juice, salt, pepper, and parsley, or a mix of parsley, mint, and chives, as I did. Toast some pitas, scoop some hummus onto a plate, pile it all together, and dig in. And then repeat until September. Here's the recipe for hummus heaped with tomatoes and cucumbers. This serves four, and it takes 15 minutes. This is so simple to make, it's almost a non-recipe, but after sharing the cooking of this on Instagram last night, I received such a happy swarm of recipe requests, and I know it can help to have things in detail, that I wanted to write it up. Salads like this are very flexible. I sometimes add bell pepper, other times radishes, and when I can get them, pomegranate areels. The key thing is that you want to chop everything very small. It should be scoopable. For a more fall-ish salad, I'd use this, and there's a link at smittenkitchen.com. If you're looking for more protein, and of course are not trying to keep this vegan, hard-boiled eggs are a popular hummus topping. If you're looking to add meat, it's not uncommon. I'd start with this lamb lentil mixture. For this recipe, you're going to need four large pitas, toasted and cut into wedges, 2 cups of prepared hummus from this recipe, your favorite recipe or your favorite brand, olive oil, 1.5 cups of cherry tomatoes, chopped small plus more to taste, 8 ounces of small cucumbers, washed, unpeeled, and chopped small, 1/4 medium red onion, chopped small, the juice of 1/2 lemon, salt and freshly ground black pepper, sumac and or za'atar, this is optional, 1 to 2 tablespoons of finely chopped parsley or a mix of parsley, mint, and chives, plus more for garnish. Spread the hummus on a large plate with the back of a spoon, creating swirls and cavities. Drizzle it lightly with olive oil just to freshen it up. And then you're going to mix tomatoes, cucumbers, onion, lemon, and about 1.5 tablespoons of olive oil, plus salt and pepper to taste in a bowl. If you have sumac, add about 1/4 teaspoon. Stir in the herbs, heap the salad on the hummus, and arrange pita wedges all around. Finish with additional za'atar and sumac and or fresh herbs. Yummo! Our next recipe is for 1-pan farro with tomatoes. I was not, in fact, looking for a new farro dish. It rarely occurs to me over the summer, and when there's more eggplant, zucchini, tomatoes, peaches, plums, berries than anyone could fathom going through in the scant weeks they're available, to wish that I had more whole grains in my diet. And since we're being honest, only occasionally in times that it probably should, such in February, when refined flours and pasta are used to filling the endless gap in growing seasons. But as it happens, because I'm terrible at timely meal planning, I was attempting to make this chicken for dinner a couple of weeks ago, and it wasn't ready on time or even close to it. And I remembered a 1-pan linguine dish that I'd read about in Martha Stewart Living last month that sounded fascinating. Realizing that I had almost all the ingredients on hand, I rustled it up instead and felt like such a domestic diva. I nearly took a bow when I brought it out, but resisted, as I preferred to only drop 1 dish a season. In the dish, pasta, only enough water to cook it, an onion, garlic cloves, some cherry tomatoes, olive oil, basil, salt and pepper, red flakes, are combined cold and brought up to a boil and cooked until the pasta is al dente and everything else becomes the dish's saucy servant, all in a single saucepan, all at once. I realize you're all leaving me right now to make it this very moment, and I don't blame you. At the very least, you need to bookmark the recipe for when you're in a pinch. And really, when is anyone not? The thing is, it totally fit the dinner bill when we needed it to, but I wasn't as crazy about it as I should have been. It was soft. You know, the sauce seemed a little gummy, I had barely finished my second bite when I became obsessed, yes, actually preoccupied to the point of sickness, when making the dish with farro instead. Farro, a variety of wheat grain, it has that meaty chew that I find appealing in salads, soups, faux risottos, and more. It isn't bad the way that it's usually cooked in water, maybe with a pinch of salt, but it's hard to argue it wouldn't benefit from a more complex flavor base. To wit, you rarely see farro dishes or salads that don't include at least one sweet thing, like dried fruit or roasted until sweet vegetables, and one bright thing, vinegar, lemon juice, or a bit of pickled onion, one salty thing, like crumbled feta, ricotta salata, or anchovies, and one crunchy thing, usually toasted nuts, and a good helping of fat, usually olive oil. And if you're lucky, all of the above. But imagine if farro arrived from its saucepan already perfectly balanced and ready to eat. It would be something of a weeknight miracle. This is the kind of rare dream of a dish that we made once and immediately added to our permanent, laminated, framed, forever and ever repertoires. In a single week, we had it three times. Three! And not a single person at the table, yes, picky 3.5-year-old included, tired of it. This is a dream come true of a grain preparation. It requires little work, little forethought. I mean, isn't there always an onion and some frequently something almost rotting tomatoes around? And it makes an almost complete meal. One night we had it with roasted sausages. Another night I had it with a poached egg on top. I can't wait to hear what you do with it next. Here's the recipe for one pan farro with tomatoes, inspired by Martha Stewart Living. In case I have not gasped about my new favorite dish enough, here, let me continue. It cooks in one pot and tastes like you worked all day on it. And when you put the ingredients in, you will surely think, this is too much onion, because it looks that way. Trust me, in that 30 minutes of simmering time, that onion becomes the foundation of a dreamy, loose tomato sauce whose flavors root deeply into each farro bite. Finished with a swirl of olive oil, scattering of basil, and sprinkling of Parmesan, if you're like us, you'll barely be into your second bite before plotting to make it again tomorrow. On a farro 101 note, the trickiest thing in writing this recipe was considering the different types of farro, from an Italian wheat strain known as emmer, available, as well as misconceptions such as the notion that it can be used interchangeably with spelt. It cannot, as spelt can take hours. Farro comes whole, unpearled, semi-pearled, which is called semi-perlato, and pearled, or perlato. Pearling describes how much of the exterior bran is removed, but packages are not always labeled. If your package says it will cook in less than 15 minutes, it's probably pearled. If it takes 30 minutes, it's probably semi-pearled. And if it takes 60 to 80 minutes, it is whole or unpearled. To make it even more confusing, I've been using the Rusticella d'Abruzzo brand, which labels it as whole farro, but is indeed semi-pearled, which is why cooking times are the best way to decipher which kind you have. This recipe will work for all three versions. There are multiple comments below noting results for each, as well as with quinoa, couscous, and even rice. Just do a word search, Control F, to find the grain that you're looking to swap. But I've defaulted to the semi-pearled below, which I find most frequently in stores. In all cases, if your package gives you a different cooking time than the 30 minutes suggested below, default to it instead. Questions? Ask away, and I will do, always as I can, my best to feign expertise. This serves 4 as a side and 2 as a hearty main. You'll need 2 cups of water, 1 cup of semi-pearled farro, 1/2 large onion, I usually use a white one for mildness, 2 cloves of garlic, 9 ounces of grape or cherry tomatoes, 1 1/4 teaspoon of kosher or coarse sea salt, up to 1/2 teaspoon of red pepper flakes to taste, 1 tablespoon of olive oil plus extra for drizzling, few basil leaves cut into thin ribbons, Grated Parmesan cheese for serving. This is optional. Place water and farro in a medium saucepan to pre-soak. I find just 5 to 10 minutes is sufficient while you prepare the other ingredients. Adding each ingredient to the pot as you finish preparing it, cut the onion in half again and very thinly slice it into quarter moons. Thinly slice garlic cloves as well, half or quarter tomatoes. Add salt, pepper flakes to taste, and 1 tablespoon of olive oil to the pan and set a timer for 30 minutes. Bring the uncovered pan, there's no lid necessary, up to a boil and then reduce to a gentle simmer, stirring occasionally. When the timer rings, the farro should be perfectly cooked, tender but with a meaty chew, seasoned, and the cooking water should be almost completely absorbed. If needed, though, I've never found it necessary. You can cook it for 5 additional minutes until the farro is more tender. Transfer to a wide serving bowl, and if there's enough leftover cooking look to be bothersome, simply use a slotted spoon to leave the amount that you wish to behind. Drizzle the farro lightly with additional olive oil, scatter with basil and Parmesan, and eat immediately and repeat tomorrow. Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff. My name is Gretchen Miller.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aincolorado.org or by calling 303-786-7777.